satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Welcome to another edition of what I call American Exposé, the deception all over the place, everywhere we look, by design, in my feelings, on a daily basis. And at this point in time, you know, it's there's lots of information to obtain on the internet, lots of documentation to obtain. The link to Sustainable Development Partnerships is shut down, apparently. It looks like the word and information is getting out to various degrees, so people are connecting dots to understanding what's going on around them. Are they realizing what Agenda 21 is actually doing? Hardly. That is my mission at this point in time. There is no other word for it at this state of the game. And it is a game. It's a theater. Wars are theater. They play this on us on a constant basis. In the paper, listeners, Terry Schiavo has received much publicity. And that is because everybody's on board on that direction, and justifiably so. According to this information in today's paper, dated March 17th, Thursday, March 17th, 2005, a state appeals court refused Wednesday to block the removal of Terry Schiavo's feeding tube, shifting the stage in the legal battle over the brain-damaged woman to the Florida legislature and appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, whatever your situation is with your life today, it can't be any more devastating than the family of Terry Schiavo. Terry Schindler Schiavo. It can't be any more devastating. Whatever your problem is, it can't be any more devastating than the parents of her. Think of how devastating or devastated you would be under their circumstances. Pray for them. This is uncalled for, unprecedented, and it is a precedenting situation. Barring new roadblocks, Michael Schiavo could have his wife's feeding tube removed at 1 p.m. Friday. Judge George Greer gave him permission to remove the tube against the wishes of her parents, Bob and Mary Schindler. Well, isn't that interesting? Well, let's connect some dots to this. I know you're hearing it all over the place. And, you know, maybe it's uncalled for at this point in time. But even Bo Greitz is getting involved in this one. And who's Bo Greitz? Can we really document who Bo Greitz is? According to Virginia, here's an actual quote from Michael Schiavo's interview where he admitted removing the feeding tube of his own parents. And the article showing the connections between Greer, Rice, Filos, Schiavo. Bo needs to issue an arrest warrant for Rice and Filos as well. I don't know where that's going to go with Bo Greitz. He's been connected in the past. There's no reason to believe that he's not connected today. Connected on the other side, I'm saying. So, apparently on a talk show, apparently it was Larry King Live, with an interview with Michael Schiavo, the caller says, does it bother you that the death is so slow? Maybe Dr. Kevorkian style would be a faster, more peaceful way. And Schiavo responds by stating removing somebody's feeding tube is painless, very painless. It is a very easy way to die, probably the second better way to die, being the first being an aneurysm. And it doesn't bother me at all. I've seen it happen. I had to do it with my own parents, he said. So this individual is posting this article along with the link. The site has been hacked. Most articles related to Terry are gone, but don't want this one to be lost, evidently. It all makes sense now according to this information. And this is coming from Jackie Petru's website, part of it. And when I'm done with this, I'll discuss where it all comes from. But it all makes sense now. Michael Schiavo was hired by Everett Rice, the former sheriff, to work in the prison hospital. Everett Rice used to sit on the hospice board with George Filos. Everett Rice is also great friends with Judge Greer. Rice and Greer even broke campaign laws and had Rice appear in campaign commercials for Greer, stating that he was tough on crime, even though Greer is a probate judge. Now the question is, how do these Supremes do, Supremes of the Florida court fit in? Once again, how do these Supremes of the Florida court fit in? Sheriff hired Michael Schiavo as jail nurse, according to the Empire Journal exclusive. 4 days before joining Florida's House of Representatives in November 2004, Everett Rice left the office of Pinellas County Sheriff, a position he had held since 1988, and after 33 years in the Sheriff's Department. Interesting. 33. But before he left office, he hired Michael Schiavo, a strange husband and guardian of Terry Schiavo. The Empire Journal has learned that days before leaving office as Pinellas County Sheriff, Rice hired Schiavo, a registered nurse, to work in the Inmates Medical Care Division of the Pinellas County Jail. Pinellas County, by the way, is very, very corrupt, and I'll deal with that at the conclusion of this. The relationship of Rice and Schiavo raises grave questions of alleged impropriety in the Terry Schiavo case and ongoing allegations of conspiracy, collusion, and cover-up, which have resulted in calls for Governor Jeb Bush to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the matter and the impaneling of grand jury. Rice's hire of Schiavo came at the same time contentious guardianship proceedings were proceeding in the courtroom of his longtime friend, Sixth Circuit Court Judge George W. Greer, where Shiva was seeking to end the life of his wife by court order of Greer. And after Rice had repeatedly refused to investigate allegations of abuse against Shiva, according to informed sources, neither Shiva nor his attorney, George Filos, disclosed to the court or attorneys for Terry's parents, Mary and Robert Schindler Sr., of Shiva's change in employment, particularly in light of the disclosure February 23rd that the State Department of Children and Families has opened an investigation into some 30 allegations of abuse, neglect, and exploitation of Terry Shiva. According to pleadings filed before Greer by DCF attorneys, Michael Shiva is the suspected abuser. The Empire Journal has also confirmed that the mother of Jody Sintanzi, Shiva's live-in girlfriend and fiancé, with whom he had two children, was employed in the Civil Division of the Sheriff's Department from June 18, 1979 until June 25, 1999, some 11 years while Rice was sheriff, and at the same time her son-in-law had petitioned Rice's good friend Judge Greer to end her daughter-in-law's life. Rice's employment of Michael Shiva came just weeks after Rice had allegedly unlawfully lent the prestige of his office and the resources of the sheriff's office in endorsement of the re-election of Greer in a televised political advertisement. Although prohibited by Florida statutes, Rice and other Pinellas County office or public officers, including State Attorney Bernie McCabe, Public Defender Bob Dillinger, allowed employees of their offices to appear in a campaign commercial for Greer, which inferred that Greer was tough on crime, although Greer is an administrative probate judge. According to a sheriff's employee, Sheriff Rice had authorized the use of the county-owned sheriff's car and the appearance of the uniformed deputy in Greer's TV commercial. State law prohibits the same. In 2003, Rice became the center of the controversy in the Terry Shiva case when Patricia Anderson, then attorney for the Schindlers, filed a motion asking Greer to rescue himself or recuse himself for alleged violations of judicial canons and bias. Greer had controlled the Shiva case since 1998. In her affidavit, Anderson said that Rice had told her that he and Greer had discussed the Shiva case at a ball game the night previous with Rice without other parties to the matter being present. Greer refused to recuse himself, and Rice later denied that he had made the comments to Anderson. John Caracas, or Caracas, an assistant attorney general in the office of Charlie Crist, was also involved in the controversy. There's much more to this, listeners, much more. But we'll cover a little bit more. Chris had previously denied that his office had ever received any allegations of abuse involving Terry Shiva. Rice, as well as McCabe, had been directly involved in the Shiva case, steadfastly denying requests to conduct alleged criminal investigations of criminal wrongdoing in the matter of Michael Shiva. Rice and Shiva's attorney, George Filos, have also served on the board of directors of the Hospice of Florida Sun Coast, the corporation that operates the Woodside Hospice in Pinellas Park, where Terry Shiva is a resident. Filos failed to disclose his affiliation with the hospice at the time in April 2000, when he and Michael Shiva moved Terry to the hospice. However, it has since been learned by the Empire Journal that the proper certification for Terry's admittance to the hospice was never completed and that she was lost legally designated as terminal, a requirement to be admitted to a hospice and for her care to be paid for by Medicare. The federal government has initiated collection procedures against the Hospice of Florida Suncoast to recover some $14.8 million, which they say was unlawfully paid to the hospice as a result of fraudulent claims made for Medicare reimbursement for patients that were not terminally ill and therefore not eligible for hospice care, allegedly at a time when both Rice and Filos were members of the hospice board of directors. Terry Shingler-Scheibel has been at the center of a life and death tug of way between her parents and Michael Scheibel, and certainly, you know, while her husband has sought permission in the probate court of Greer to end the life of his wife by the removal of her assisted feeding. Her parents have fought in Greer's courtroom to keep her alive, saying that she could be rehabilitated with therapy and proper treatment, which has been denied the woman. And I can understand why this has become such an emotional battle. And once again, unless a stay is issued in the Second District Court of Appeals or other action is forthcoming by the legislature or other agencies, Terry Scheibel will have her feeding tube removed at 1 p.m. tomorrow, which will result in her death by starvation in 7 to 10 days. This is the most ridiculous situation in the world, to be in this circumstance. And once again, whatever your problems are with your life today, listeners, it can't be anything compared to Terry Shingler-Scheibel's parents and what they're going through. And that's just the bottom line. Now back to this article. Court refuses to block removal of feeding tube in today's paper. It says here, George Filos, who represents Michael Scheibel, could not immediately be reached for comment. The Second District Court of Appeal in Lakeland denied the Schindler's request to delay removal of the feeding tube. The court also refused a new trial on claims that Terry Scheibel's rights were violated because she didn't have her own attorney. The appeals court also rejected the Department of Children and Families' request for a 60-day stay while that agency investigates allegations that Terry Scheibel has been abused. And certainly there is evidence of that, according to certain sources. The appellate court said in Wednesday's ruling that the issues the Schindlers raised were not new ones and had been dealt with previously by numerous courts. Federal courts have declined to become involved in the case. Amazing. Scheibel, 41, has been hospitalized since 1990. When her heart stopped beating temporarily and oxygen was cut off from her brain, and certainly this is the article from the paper. Doctors have ruled she is in a persistent vegetative state. Michael Scheibel has said his wife would not want to be kept alive with no hope for recovery. Her parents dispute that. She has no mental cognition and say her daughter responds to them. Michael Scheibel is certainly involved in another relationship with two children. They're common law married right now. But the parents should have a right to take care of their daughter. Plain and simple. But this is a precedent-setting case. Others have been paying much attention to this, and I'm happy that they are. We have a mess everywhere we look. Created crisis everywhere by design. And here we see Condoleezza Rice on Wednesday brought the Bush administration's push for democracy to Pakistan, where General Pervez Musharraf has been a welcome ally against Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda terrorist network, but has proved hesitant to surrender power he took in a coup in 1999. In a brief recap of a three-hour meeting between Rice and Musharraf, which included dinner, State Department spokesman Richard Boucher said Rice, quote, expressed her firm support for steady movement along a path to free and fair elections in 2007, end quote. Your State Department. What's going on with the State Department, people? You know, when you see what's going on, when you see what's being engineered, when you see how it's being maneuvered, when you learn about situations, well, what is going on at the State Department and the United States mission to the United Nations? Lots going on there, and we'll be covering some of that tonight. In the second hour, actually, after this hour, I'll be doing Melody Cedarstrom's broadcast on WBCQ. That will be following this hour. Not a for sure thing all the time, just tonight. I'll be filling in for Melody Cedarstrom tonight on her financial survival broadcast on WBCQ 7.415 and on the internet, WBCQ.com. We see here, I don't think I've covered this, March 15th or 16th was the date. China's new law authorizing military force against Taiwan could make Europe think twice about selling new weaponry to the Chinese, and I did cover this last night. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said Tuesday. Rice in Asia for talks has a long agenda in Beijing later this week, a visit made more delicate by China's decision to codify a threat to attack Taiwan if the island declares independence. Rice said she will discuss it with Chinese leaders. Rice is a closet communist. She'll do whatever it takes to unify them. Sad, sad state of affairs. In South Korea, nighttime spy satellite photos illustrate the stark contrast between the two Koreas. The capital of South is aglow with shimmering constellations of light, while the North disappears into blackness. That's about to change for a small corner of the North. Today, for the first time since the Koreas were divided, South will pipe electricity into North Korea for a joint economic zone meant to foster cooperation between the countries sharing the world's most heavily fortified border. Oh, yes. A heavily fortified border. Yes, yes, yes. Well, I just, you know, I've said it over and over and over again. The mess that we have, listeners, the mess that we have, and 54,000 dying in Korea, 8,000 POWs being shipped off to the Soviet Union and Communist China, according to the Helms Report from 1992, is a slap in the face to the American people. But it's a real credit to the brainwashing techniques of those in charge to lull us to sleep, to keep us complacent, to keep us off into another thought patterns all the time. That is the way it goes. I'm just appalled at how stupid we can be to accept what's going on tonight and these days. From Terry Schiavo to Michael Jackson to Robert Blake, who was acquitted. And I have no idea about that and that situation. How do you? To O.J. Simpson from the past. Here we see, dated March 12th, former President Bush shows his jacket lining to Edward Weston, 9 years old, and Alex Weston, 12 years old, as their mother, Rosa Weston, shows off her certificate of U.S. citizenship. Almost 50 U.S. soldiers, many returning from Iraq, were sworn in as citizens Friday at the George Bush Presidential Library in College Station, Texas. So what do we have but soldiers from other countries joining our military to become citizens? That is a perfect example of a mercenary military, listeners. A mercenary military. As things have turned, if things go along and move along, hearken back to February 2nd, 2005. where President Bush made a statement. Quote, over the next several months, on issue after issue, let us do what Americans have always done and build a better world for our children and grandchildren, end quote. In his State of the Union address, President Bush described the state of our union as confident and strong. The U.S. economy is growing steadily. More Americans are finding jobs, and our nation is serving as an active force for good in the world. This is coming from the State Department, listeners. The President conveyed his gratitude to the American people for the privilege to serve once again, and a renewed commitment in the guiding ideal of liberty for all. He recognized that over the last 4 years, Americans have come together to overcome great challenges, and he underscored his faith and confidence in the American people and our nation's future. President Bush laid out ambitious goals for the future, behind which all Americans can unite, and urged the nation to move forward with the work that needs to be done this year. Okay, so let's pick this thing apart. Number one, growing our economy and renewing great institutions. Now, what is he talking about? The WTO, the World Trade Organization, NAFTA, GATT, and FTAA, getting that ratified. And renewing great institutions he talks about. What is he talking about? Renewing the United Nations system. Not getting out of the UN, but building it up to the better eyes of the American people. Number two, saving Social Security for America's future generations. How do you disclose and discuss and discount Social Security when you reach 65 years old? It's good to have that benefit, even though you paid into it all your life. That is the disputing point right now. As those that have paid in so much, what are they going to get back? And certainly Social Security is something I've stayed away from, because here we are way along into this great society, and certainly it started with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and it actually started with the Federal Reserve System. Number three in Bush's goals is protecting America's families and promoting compassion across the nation. What does he mean by that? Protecting America's families and promoting compassion across the nation. Protecting America's families, homeland security, more restrictions, internal passports, all sorts of different functions to make you more secure while you give up more of your freedom. Promoting compassion across the nation, that's to allow the immigrants and migration to be accepted by America, as that is one of the major dictates of NAFTA. And the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, a UN document that's been in place since 1948, December 10th. In 1998, December 10th, President Clinton signed Executive Order 13107, Implementation of Human Rights Treaties. That is going on, and that is what George Walker Bush is talking about, promoting compassion across the nation to accept more migration in this country. Number four, making America safer with decisive action to win the war on terror and spread freedom. What is he talking about when he talks about freedom? And what is he talking about the decisive action to win the war on terror? What is the war on terror? Who is the terrorist, and who are going to be the terrorists? Thank you.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Discover the most important health discovery in 40 years, the goji berry. The world's number one nutritionist, Dr. Earl Mundell, has discovered through his research one of the most powerful anti-aging foods ever discovered, a 2,000-year-old secret from the Himalayas. Under the microscope and backed by scientific research, they say the goji berry could be one of the most nutritionally dense foods on Earth. Come try a delicious, all-natural, 100% juice that comes with a 90-day money-back guarantee. To learn more about the secrets of the goji berry, call 877-888-4777. To learn more about the secrets of the goji berry, give us a call at 877-888-4777. That's 877-888-4777.
If you can hear my voice, you are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. If you would like to continue hearing these programs, there are several ways that you can help. One, you can make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there. Two, you can sponsor your favorite program with your business advertising dollars or spend your dollars with those businesses that advertise on your favorite programs. Three, simply call in on live programs and tell them that you are listening on firstamendmentradio.com. Now anyone can do that one. You can find the call-in numbers on our schedule pages at firstamendmentradio.com. Thank you for listening.
I continue with this Bush dissertation on the State Department website. I want to connect some certain dots, as we were talking about before I went to break. Growing our economy and renewing great institutions. They state that over the past 4 years, we have provided tax relief to every taxpayer, overcome a recession, opened new markets abroad, prosecuted corporate criminals, raised home ownership to the highest level in history, and in the last year alone created 2.3 million jobs for Americans. The president believes we must add to those achievements to keep America the economic leader of the world. How can we be the economic leader in the world when we're a debt society, when we have a deficit spending situation, when we're indebted to the entire world? How can that be, listeners? Is this just not a bold-faced lie? And have they really created 2.3 million jobs for Americans? And how many of those 2.3 million jobs connect to the service economy? It also states that to ensure prosperity for future generations, we must reform institutions, retirement plans, the tax code, our health care system. What about the tax code? What about the IRS? Aren't the IRS the revenues for the IMF? The worker training programs. What are the worker training programs but to initiate people into employment in government agencies to implement Agenda 21? And they say, and worker training programs that were created for the world of yesterday, not tomorrow. See? Bring us into Agenda 21. We must transform these systems so that all Americans are equipped and prepared to realize the American dream. What is the American dream? Rewilding America? Devastating industry? Sending it below the border and overseas? This is the point and the problem that we deal with on a constant basis. What would it be like if Al Gore was president? Or John Kerry? He wouldn't have anything to say because he hadn't been in office enough. Strengthening spending restraint while meeting our nation's priorities. The president's budget reflects the country's most important priorities of ensuring economic growth and fighting the war on terror. What is the war on terror? Who are the real terrorists? Who created the terrorists? And how come we can't get to the bottom of who created the terrorists? What does the Central Intelligence Agency do? What does MI6 do from England? What does the Mossad do from Israel? What does the former KGB do, which is the FSB, I believe, now, I'm sure? I'm not sure. But the KGB just changed its name. The Soviet Union changed its name to Russia for our consumption. The ultimate goal is to merge this country with Russia, and certainly the dumbing down process in America is well underway. So Bush wants to strengthen high schools. The No Child Left Behind Act is bringing important reforms to America's elementary schools by insisting on standards and accountability for results. Well, what are those standards and accountability for? United Way, United UNICEF directions through the UN system. The early grades are seeing progress across America, but we must improve America's high schools. The president wants high standards to be applied to America's high schools to ensure that every student graduates with the skills needed to succeed in college and a global competitive workforce. There you have the UN picture, the global competitive workforce, the World Trade Organization. His fiscal year 2006 budget will provide $1.5 billion in funding for a new high school initiative to help states hold high schools accountable for teaching all students and to provide effective and timely intervention for those students who are not learning at grade level. This initiative includes requirements for state assessments in high school to ensure that diplomas are truly meaningful. Well, gee, why do they have to do this after all this time, listeners? That is the question I ask. Why do they have to do this after all these years of dumbing down? And this is just part of the situation with this administration, which is no different than the last administration, which is no different than the administration before that. We're continuing to move into a UN system that we don't know about. And that is the big problem at this juncture, listeners. We're being maneuvered and manipulated into a UN system. And most of us don't have a clue about that. I'm so sorry to be this way about what's on the plate for America. U.S. reached a settlement in 1945 gold train theft, dated March 12th, out of Miami, Florida, from the Associated Press. The federal government Friday reached a $25.5 million settlement with families of Hungarian Holocaust victims and will acknowledge the U.S. Army's role in commandeering a trainload of treasures during World War II. Under terms of the settlement, the money will be distributed to needy Hungarian Holocaust survivors rather than those who lost family possessions. Quote, the case never really was about money alone. It was about having a reckoning with history, end quote, said Sam Dubin, one of the family's lawyers. He called the agreement a great outcome. The Justice Department, which negotiated on behalf of the government, issued a statement saying it was, quote, very pleased to announce, end quote, the settlement. A commission appointed by then-President Clinton concluded in 1999 that high-ranking U.S. Army officers and troops plundered the train after it was intercepted on its way to Germany in May 1945 during the closing days of the war. The train carried gold, jewels, 1,200 paintings, silver, china, porcelain, 3,000 oriental carpets, and other heirlooms seized from Jewish families by the Nazis. The cargo would be worth $45 million to $90 million in today's dollars, according to this information from the AP, the Associated Press, the Press of Associations. About $21 million in funding for humanitarian services will be distributed to social service agencies based on the percentage of survivors, including 40% in Israel, 22% in Hungary, 21% in the United States and 7% in Canada. Up to $3.85 million is proposed for legal fees and costs. A total of $500,000 would fund an archive in the so-called Nazi Gold Train for scholarly and educational uses. I don't know what to say about that. I really don't. Here we see from Reuters, fighting crime the 11th century way. Tighter gun ownership laws are pushing South Africans to buy crossbows, spears, swords, knives, and pepper sprays to protect themselves from violent crime. Quote, we've had to build an entirely new shop because the demand from people is so great, end quote. Justin Wilmers, owner of Durban Guns and Ammo, told Reuters, quote, it can't be anything from a Zulu fighting spear, battle axes, swords, crossbows, end quote. New gun controls come into force last year under South Africa's Firearms Control Act, but some weapons shop owners say high crime rates are pushing law-abiding citizens to look for alternative means of defending themselves. Despite official figures showing the murder rate falling 10% in the year to March 2004, South Africa's Arms and Ammunition Dealers Association says individuals face a 1 in 60 chance of being the victim of a violent crime in any given year. Many houses are surrounded by razor wire and electric fences, but with police turning down 80% of firearms license requests from an 18-month application process, Association spokesman Alex Holmes said people were forced to look at other options. Where's it going to end, people? Where's it going to end? With the shootings that have been publicized recently, where's the gun control debate going to happen in America today? They want our guns in America? They, meaning those in charge, government agencies, the United Nations system, listeners, the UN system, wants us disarmed. Estimates of the number of illegal firearms in South Africa vary between 1 and 4 million. Why are they illegal, listeners? But the real problem is some 30 to 40,000 hardcore criminals using a small number of illegal guns. South Africa beginning firearms amnesty on January 1st. To that date, and netted some 13,000 weapons, officials told Reuters, but critics say most of the weapons handed in are old and would never have been used for crime. Quote, it's mostly been grannies and grandpas that are handing in weapons that are probably unusable anyhow, end quote, Wilmers said. In the meantime, people from all walks of life are acquiring weapons not restricted by law. Quote, the guys have just had enough, end quote, Wilmers said. Men are buying machetes to fight off hijackers or crossbows to shoot people breaking into their property. While women are more likely to buy a pepper spray, he said. One customer successfully fought off three hijackers with a machete, slashing one, he said. A beggar had bought a pepper spray so he could fight off those who tried to steal his shoes as he slept on the street. With some homeowners worried about prosecution if they kill intruders, the crossbow is particularly popular because of its silence and the difficulty of tracing the firer from forensic evidence. With no legal restrictions on sales, weapons shop staff to exercise judgment in who they sold to, Wilmer said. Where will it end? Where will it stop? There. And this is the problem, people. It'll come here, too. the chaos will come here in certain measures and manners. Chaos is ordo ab kale, people. Ordo out of chaos. Ordo ab kale. According to Reuters, President Bush said on Thursday, which was today, he has selected Representative Bob Portman, a seven-term Republican congressman from Ohio, to be the next U.S. trade representative. Quote, as a member of the House of Representatives leadership, Rob, has shown he can bring together people from differing views to get things done, end quote, Bush said at a White House event to announce Portman's nomination. The surprise choice, which must be confirmed by the Senate, comes as the White House faces strong opposition in Congress to one of its key trade initiatives, a new free trade pact with five Central American countries and the Dominican Republic. Bush said the United States would continue to pursue, quote, a bold trade agenda, end quote, including the completion of a Western Hemisphere free trade pact and a new world trade deal. There you have it, listeners. FTAA is going to be a done deal by the Bush administration. It's not Bush's call. That is the FTAA on the horizon. You've got to stop the FTAA, and that commercial on this network is very relevant. And that's the way it is. Sad commentary to have regarding the situation in this country. But listeners, it's been sad for decades. The 54,000 that lost their lives in Korea is a sad commentary that people forget. I won't let you forget it. The 58,000 that lost their lives in Vietnam is a sad, sad scenario. A UN deal brokered by the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, CETO. The mess continues to this day in a new part of the globe, a new quote-unquote region called Iraq. From the Associated Press dated March 17th, Shiite and Kurdish officials reported progress Thursday in resolving disagreements over territorial issues and cabinet posts, but said they may need another week to put together Iraq's coalition government. In violence around Iraq, six U.S. soldiers were wounded in the north city of Mosul when a convoy was attacked by a car bomber. Captain Patricia Brewer said in Baghdad, according to a witness, Faisal Qassam, the bombing was carried out by a suicide bomber who slammed his car into a convoy of seven armored vehicles, striking the fourth. Nearly 2 months after they braved death to vote, many Iraqis are growing frustrated over the slow pace of the talks to form a new government. What kind of new government are they going to put together with the UN, the IMF, and the U.S. military, with the coalition involved to stranglehold it into the UN system? What kind of new government are they going to have? What is democracy defined as, listeners? Quote, these negotiations included many things, not just the Kurdish issues, but also regarding the shape of the Iraqi government, end quote, said Interim Deputy Prime Minister Bahram Shali, a Kurd. It occurred to me that this is just another UN setup, listeners. The latest setback came after Kurdish politicians reportedly insisted on amending a deal they struck last week with the Shiite-dominated United Iraqi Alliance. They agreed, however, to go ahead with a ceremony Wednesday swearing in the 275-seat National Assembly elected January 30th. But the deputies failed to set a date to reconvene, did not elect a speaker or nominate a president and vice president, all of which they had hoped to do their first day. Instead, the session was spent raveling in the seating of Iraq's first democratic legislature in a half century. The failure to appoint top officials stemmed from inability of Shiites, Kurds, and Sunni Arabs to agree on a speaker for the new legislature. Disagreement over the oil-rich northern city of Kirkuk and renewed haggling over cabinet posts. This will be an ongoing process, listeners. It's just going to continue. It's just going to continue and continue and move on and on and on. There's much more to this article, entitled Groups Make Progress on New Iraq Government, from the Associated Press. You've got to be joking. What a setup, people. I have something to cover from Jan Molina. We'll have to do it in the next hour on WBCQ.com. Melody's broadcast. According to the Associated Press, dated March 15th, from Moscow, after decades of hammers and sickles, red flags, and wordy slogans, Russia's communists are looking to a propaganda device Lenin and Stalin never dreamed of, cell phone text messaging. The Communist Party is struggling to regain influence and broaden its aging support base, and its leaders on Saturday called for a fresh propaganda push to attract younger Russians and gain attention despite being largely shut out by the Kremlin-dominated news media. In a party plenary meeting outside Moscow that focused on propaganda, a word that in Russia evokes images of the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution, First Deputy Chairman Ivan Melnikov said the communists should turn to methods such as graffiti and cell phone messaging. Members of the party's youth wing, quote, could use telephones to send political jokes or rhymes or attract attention to events, anything that motivates a person to send the message along to someone else, end quote, Melnikov said in comments broadcast on NTV television. Cell phones are now widely used in a country where people struggled 15 years ago to find 2 kopeck pieces to feed payphones. Many Russians, from savvy Moscow school children to their grandmothers in the countryside, are proficient at using short messaging service, or SMS, to send messages to family and friends. Such messages, known here as Izmensky, are particularly popular among teenagers and young adults. Melnikov also said the party should make more use of the internet, NTV reported. Communist Party leader Gennady Zhukov said the party, known since the 1991 Soviet breakup for street protests dominated by elderly people carrying red banners, should shed outdated slogans and tailor its language to specific groups, the ICHAR Task News Agency reported. Zhukov called on his comrades to smarten up their propaganda efforts, using artistic images, satire, and advertising, using a phrase from that capitalist tool. He said they should seek to sell the brand of the party, according to the news agency. Oh, really? There's much more to cover here, people. Next hour, I'll do it. Including from Jan Molina, the anticommunist.com. Historically, the spread of communism is not questionable. It is very real. The political and ideological support the people behind this strategy have given to it is virtually unlimited. It is therefore in their best interest to use any means necessary to further this communist evil until the full worldwide implementation of it is achieved. That's the purpose of the UN system, listeners. Democracy is the code word for socialism leading to communism. It is therefore obvious that the military strategy follows orders and follows the ideological goals of the political communist leadership without any questions, with the full knowledge of its potential and aftermath. This is very apparent when we look at the 1933 statement by Dmitry Manilinsky of the Lenin School of Political Warfare. Quote, "War to the hilt between communism and capitalism is inevitable. Today, of course, we are not strong enough to attack. Our time will come in 30 to 40 years. To win, we will need the element of surprise. The bourgeoisie will have to be put to sleep. So we shall begin by launching the most spectacular peace movement on record. There will be electrifying overtures and unheard-of concessions. The capitalist countries, stupid and decadent, will rejoice to cooperate in their own destruction. They will leap at another chance to be friends. As soon as their guard is down, we shall smash them with our clenched fist," end quote. That is no lie, listeners. That is the way it is. That is the way it's coming. And that's the way it's been. When Stalin used his power over the masses, he knew what the cost would be behind such tyranny, but he did it anyway. With the full knowledge of Lenin's teachings, Stalin went through with his application of power and tyranny and used as much of it as he deemed necessary. And I'll cover this in its entirety in the next hour. But the bottom line is, listeners, we're being fed a line and a lie on a daily basis. We're being deceived constantly. The Soviet Union collapsed for our consumption. Every country has a president for our consumption because we are the target for destruction. This country is the target for destruction. This country is where everyone wants to migrate to because every other country has become totalitarianism or totalitarianized. We are in the midst of the land of ignoration because of the dumbing down process in the schools. This is all by design. And as we move along, as your sons and daughters will be invoked into the draft, Agenda 21 is in every country in the world. Agenda 21 is in South Korea. Agenda 21 is not in Taiwan, because Taiwan was ousted out of the UN because that was a stipulation that Communist China made to be a member of the UN. So, a good place to be would be Taiwan. They have more freedom than most countries. And that is the situation that we live. Okay, listeners, that's it for here on First Amendment Radio. I'll move to WBCQ.com momentarily. And 7.415 on shortwave radio. And have a good evening. God bless you all.